Candace Michelle, and welcome to another edition of Our Community for KCIW, your community radio station. You know, one of the challenges of living in a remote, rural area like ours can be the availability of good medical care. Now, while it's true that we don't have a lot of the facilities that more populated areas have, we do have some excellent medical personnel. One of my favorites is my guest today, Dr. William McDougall. He's not only a great doctor, but he also treats his patients with kindness and compassion, which is probably a great part of what makes him a great doctor. Welcome to the show, Dr. William McDougall.
Thank you, Candace, and what a flattering introduction.
Well, it's all true. You happen to be my husband's doctor, and I just love you. Enough said. We're going to talk about the epidemic that is sweeping our country, the one that no one really wants to talk about, and that is killing us in staggering numbers in a multitude of ways. But before we get into that, I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you grew up, how you came to be here, you know, all the really interesting stuff.
Well, thanks. Very simple story. Obviously, this is the most beautiful area in the world. This has been in my sights for many years before coming here to the Northwest and the coastal regions. At a time about 15 years ago, I had two young children, and my wife unfortunately passed away from breast cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Having to raise them and looking for a community that was both scenic, natural, with clean air and clean water, I decided that this was probably the best area I could be. So I packed them up from Tennessee and
moved them
to the West Coast. And here's
west.
Where we've been for the last 14 to 15
no
years.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you couldn't have picked a better place.
It's gorgeous here.
Yeah.
And what
and
an honor to be.
The community is very fortunate to have you.
Thank you.
Really. There are not many doctors that I have known in my life, and I've known a few, that have the kind of compassion and kindness that you do when you're dealing with your patients. And I just think that's huge, and especially when you're dealing with an older population that maybe doesn't hear really well and maybe doesn't move quite as fast and, you know, doesn't process things as quickly. It's nice to have that compassion.
Well, this is a great population of people. Dealing with this, these decades of population, I should say, after the age of 50, we start really experiencing many of the health problems that are encountered.
Why didn't my mother tell me that?
I know, it's unfair. We weren't warned.
No warning. None. I mean, you'd think that I would have noticed, right, by watching her and noticing that she was not as healthy as she had been, but you just don't when you're in your 20s. Like, you think you're going to live forever.
Well, the amazing thing is, Candace, is that the disability and debility we experience in our 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th decades, much of which is unnecessary. We, in our country, look at the aging process as being one of losing function, deteriorating, eventuating in a nursing home stay, and that becomes the paradigm of the end of life.
And it's pretty hideous, frankly.
It's a scary thought.
Yeah.
When you look at other countries around the world, countries that have different social, economic, and dietary construct, we look at a very different picture. We look at people living into their 9th and 10th decades that are functional, that have all their cognitive capacity.
Wow.
That don't have heart problems, that have very little arthritic problems, that don't have stomach, lung, and liver disease. We know many of the factors that contribute to these diseases. We know smoking is bad for the lungs. We know drinking is bad for the liver and everything else in the body. But one of the subjects we don't address, at least in my opinion and in a growing number of people's opinions, is the importance of diet in our aging process.
So how is, because I read somewhere that this epidemic is obesity in our country, and how is that linked with diet?
Well, obesity, as I think we're all aware, at least through watching the news and listening to the media, and maybe even going to the grocery store and seeing what population of people we're dealing with, is a very much growing problem in our country. It's also growing in many other developing nations. If we look back 40 and 50 years ago, the obesity epidemic wasn't really here. If we go back to as early as 1980, I don't know if you remember, Candace, but I certainly remember looking around my classroom and there was maybe one obese child. And that poor child, unfortunately, was targeted.
Yes.
Now we look around classrooms and we see 20 to 40% of our childhood population as being overweight. So things have really changed. That change has come about because our food has changed. Not only has our society changed in that we're spending more time sedentary, but the actual composition of what we're eating has been dramatically corrupted, I should say.
Well, I do remember when I was a kid that there was no fast food, or as it started, I guess, when I was a kid. I think we did have a McDonald's by the time I was like 15 or 16. But basically, that wasn't the food you ate. And most of my peers didn't eat that. I mean, you had home-cooked meals, and there was vegetables on your plate. You may not have liked them a lot, but, you know, there was vegetables on your plate. It was fresh food. It wasn't, that's my memory of it anyway.
Right. The number one consumed vegetable today is potato. Unfortunately, it's not baked or boiled. It's in the form of French
fried. Yes, which happens to be one of my favorite foods. But yeah, it's not so good for you.
Well, the industry loves it that way. And they're as scientific about it as the tobacco industry, Candace. They know what flavors that seduces as much as they do. They know that fats and salt and high fructose corn syrup and refinement of foods is very palatable and even addictive.
Really? Now that's interesting.
There's a science behind the food industry that aims, as much as the tobacco industry has, at addicting its consuming population.
Why am I not surprised and yet horrified?
Well, it's an industry, Candace. What they're interested in is not necessarily making you ill. What they're interested in is the financial bottom line.
Profits.
Right.
Right.
And so as a consequence, we have an industry that really pays attention to the consumption rather than the health of the individual. There's a great quote by Wendell Berry, the author. He says, "People are fed by the food industry, which pays no attention to health, and are treated by the health industry, which pays no attention to food."
Yeah, I have to tell you, of all the doctors in my life, the only one who has ever made a point out of talking about the food is you.
Well, we're not educated to talk about food and diet and how critical that is to all of our well-beings. If we're lucky, we get maybe an hour or two in medical school.
An hour or two in medical school?
If we're lucky.
Oh, my word.
On nutrition. And we're taught the four basic food groups. We're never told that meat causes cancer. We're never told that dietary fats increase vascular disease. We're never told that the foods that make up our industrial foods are killing us. And to advise our patients to move to a whole food diet.
Why not?
Well, again, we're looking at the bottom line. The bottom line for the drug company is drug sales. Why would you want to educate a physician population to focus on making people well when you can talk them into selling a drug?
That's appalling.
Again, the bottom line speaks. Nobody sets out to do anybody harm. We just all want to make
money.
Money, right.
And I understand that. I mean, I want a roof over my head and food on my plate and clothes to wear. I mean, I get it, but seems like if people's lives are hanging in the balance, you might want to, I don't know, tell the truth. I don't know.
Well, the truth is a big change from our paradigm we're used to today.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that we have a diet that's anywhere from 35 to 45% fat calories. We have a protein intake that's anywhere between 15 and 30% protein intake. We have very little unrefined carbohydrates. And that makes up the majority of our industrial food. Prepackaged fast food, stuff that's on the shelf, ready to put in the microwave and then set on the table.
Mm-hmm.
We are not programmed in medical school to teach people that a 35% fat calorie or 40% fat calorie diet, 20% to 30% protein, and the rest refined carbohydrates is killing them.
So can you expand on that a little bit? What way is it killing us?
Well, it's interesting, but the World Health Organization, a very big organization advising the world on its needs for health change, came out in October and made the statement that meat causes cancer.
They did?
Not just red meat, chicken meat.
Wait. This organization said that meat causes cancer?
Oh, very clearly. Colon.
Why haven't I heard about this?
Pancreas, stomach, kidney. Meat causes cancer.
Wow.
And it doesn't matter what animal source you're talking about. It's
all
the
same. Even fish.
Even fish.
Wow.
Fish has its own health consequences
mm-hmm.
in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, they stated that eating animals is equivalent to smoking for the colon.
No.
It's that bad.
Wow.
In particular, in the form of processed meats.
So like the lunch meat and bacon and like that?
Right.
Okay.
Right. So we know now by
God,
a major
we love
statement.
Love bacon.
I do too. I just choose not to eat it.
Right. I get it.
So we know that meat causes cancer. It's not meant for human consumption.
Okay, but that information, just so that you know, is not really out there. I mean,
right.
You know it, but I'm assuming that all of the rest of us, most of whom continue to go to the meat counter at Freddy's, don't know that.
Well, we've been taught that protein is important for
mm-hmm.
us. And we've had industries like the beef industry and fast food industries saying, eat more chicken.
Right. As an alternative to eating beef.
Right.
Right.
Telling us that this is important for our health. When in contrast to that, the truth is that animal products do not do anything to promote our health. They take away from our health.
Wow. Wow.
Then there's the dairy industry,
mm-hmm.
which is mind-blowing that at entry level into school, the dairy industry has millions of dollars set aside every year to train our children to be lifelong consumers of dairy products. Not because it builds strong bones, in fact, it increases the risk of osteoporosis as we age, but because of the bottom line.
Now, I distinctly remember in first and second grade that we had milk, and you brought your nickel for your milk, that was your milk money, and gave it to the teacher and went out for recess. And when you came back from morning recess, there was a carton of milk sitting on your desk.
You must have grown up in a more affluent neighborhood than mine. I only paid 3 cents.
Oh, sorry. Well, I went to Catholic school, so maybe that made the difference.
I'm sure.
The other 2 cents went to the Pope. I don't know. Sorry, that was irreverent. Yeah, but seriously, you know, you didn't... and. I mean, you had to have that milk every day. You didn't have to have it, but everybody did.
Well, and, you know, we've been taught so strongly that milk is such an essential, perfect food for
yes.
development that
yes.
there's a sense of guilt by not giving it to your children.
So it's not really the perfect food for development.
It is when it's from mother.
Ah.
Until the age of about 3.
Huh.
Like any other mammal on the planet.
Right, right.
We don't drink milk beyond the weanling years. But in our society, we're trained.
Right.
Just the way the dairy industry wants us to be trained, to be lifelong consumers. So we continue to put this material in our bodies, stimulating our cells with growth hormones.
Is that what the problem is? Is that it's growth hormones?
It's a big, big problem, Candace.
Really?
Well, milk is designed to grow a baby calf from 60 to 600 pounds in 6 months. That's its only purpose.
I know. I'm looking, thank God I'm not 600 pounds, but yeah, wow.
Well, what do you think it continues to do for people as they go beyond the weanling years? The same thing.
Wow.
So we wonder, what is it that makes us obese in our society? Well, we have a huge dairy consumption. We have a huge increase in fat and general calorie consumption. Intake has increased over the last 50 years. Oil increase has increased over the last 50 years. Dairy intake has increased not in the form of milk, but in the form of cheese.
Oh, yes.
Cheese pizza, cheese sandwiches,
everywhere.
Cheese everything,
yeah,
cheese
exactly.
Topped, cheese sticks.
Yeah.
It's cheese on cheese.
Cheese.
Cheese in your crust, cheese in everything. So we've gone from a society that drank whole milk at one time, albeit cow's milk and not necessarily healthy, to a society that's eating massive amounts of cheese.
Now, cheese is also processed, right? So there's got to be some other stuff going on there with that. It's not.
Well, cheese is a fermented milk product.
Okay.
And basically what happens in the fermentation product process is that bacteria chew up every caloric availability in the milk, all the sugars. And they excrete waste products, which add flavor to the milk. And that's the different cheese flavors that you get from brie to cheddar to mozzarella.
Really?
And that's what makes the difference, the different
somehow
acid
that's
composition.
That's not really appetizing when you describe it like that.
I understand why. So we're getting the leftover from bacterial consumption of a dairy product.
Wow.
That is 21 times, 11 to 21 times the concentration of milk in the stuff that we really don't want. And that is the growth hormone, the estrogens, the dioxins and other pollutants that are in our society, in our environment. And so we're feeding really concentrated pesticide-laden, hormone-laden and growth hormone, IGF-1-laden food to our children.
In large quantities.
In large quantities.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we look at one of the more insulting aspects of meat and dairy consumption, it's this IGF-1. It's this growth hormone. It's linked to increased risk of cancer. It's linked to obesity. It's linked to childhood acne or adolescent acne. Many other medical problems. It's not a good hormone to have floating around in our bodies.
And we've got tons of it.
Tons of it, all the time.
And we just keep dosing ourselves.
Every day.
Just in case we run out, we got to dose them again.
That's right.
Interesting. Interesting. So if you eliminate meat, if you eliminate dairy, if you eliminate, I don't know, fast foods and stuff, I mean, what are you left with?
And that's what many people wonder. What do I eat?
Yeah, right?
I'm lost.
Paper. I don't know.
The industry that's been feeding me and making my food available to me and making it so easy and all I have to do is
and
throw
so
it in the
yummy.
Microwave. And yummy, not to mention yummy. Now what do I eat?
Because they're actually killing me.
Well, yes, if you understand that and you're able to look beyond that and say, okay, maybe what I'm eating can be changed. Then what you have to do is go back to what we were originally intended to eat, and that is God's majestic palate, all the foods that we grow from the earth. So we eliminate animal, we eliminate dairy, we eliminate the added oils that are taken out of the food for us to add back to it for cooking ease and palatability. And we go to what our ancestors did thousands of years ago. We eat what didn't run from us.
Yeah. Because it's hard to eat those things that keep running away.
It takes tools and it takes a lot of endurance to get them.
Yeah. Because we know that our ancestors certainly did eat meat, but it was much harder to go out and hunt down something, and you couldn't eat a lot of it because there was a group of you, and right? I mean, mostly what you had to eat were plants.
That's right. The ease of acquisition of food, particularly before we migrated from the equator, was much easier for those things that you didn't have to chase or hunt down.
Mm-hmm.
Tubers from the ground called underground storage organs,
mm-hmm.
fruits from the trees, leaves, plants, cores of edible plants were all easy access foods. Now, as we migrated away from the equator, if you believe in evolution, about anywhere from 60,000 to 200,000 years ago, to find calories outside of the lush tropics was a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And as we moved away from the equatorial zones, eating animals became a more predominant thing.
Mm-hmm. So if you follow that train of thought, is it true that the people near the equator eat better, or maybe they've changed their diets too?
Well, if you look at tropical areas of the world, traditionally they've had more of a plant-based diet. When you go away from those extremes into the Laplanders and the Eskimos, you have a highly meat-based diet. And people will make the argument based on very flawed data that Eskimos don't have heart attacks. And that's not true. They have terrible heart disease.
Really?
In studies that have been done where Eskimos have been buried some 500 to 600 years ago in avalanches. They do autopsies on the women that were found. They found not only significant coronary artery disease, but dramatic osteoporosis.
Wow.
And these women were 35 to 50 years of age.
No kidding. Huh.
The reason that they developed osteoporosis was because the high protein intake of their diets.
So I'm sure there's like scientific stuff that shows how that all happens, right? Like how does meat basically end up causing osteoarthritis?
Right.
Right.
You want to know more?
Yeah.
All right.
Heck yeah.
Well, you know, we're designed to be plantitarians, basically. I mean, if you look at our incisors, people will make the argument, well, we have canines. Wait a minute, we're supposed to be meat eaters.
But they're not very big, are they?
They are ancillary incisors. They're nothing more than helpful incisors. If you want to look at real canines, of course, you look at carnivorous creatures. You look at
my dog,
or a chimpanzee, or an ape. They have canines.
Okay,
even their canines are not meant for meat eating. They're probably more of a territorial or a defense mechanism. But those creatures, they're anywhere from 95% to 98% plant eaters. Human beings have no equipment for chasing, capturing, or eating raw animals.
No. We're not very fast.
We're just not built for it.
We're not like a cheetah, right? We're not like that.
But we are built for digestion of starch.
Hmm.
From mastication, which is chewing,
mm-hmm.
we have the ability to swing our jaw from side to side, much like a cow does.
Mm-hmm.
So we can grind our food,
mm-hmm.
making the starches more and more available. We have these massive glands in the sides of our cheeks known as parotid glands,
mm-hmm.
and they make a special enzyme known as amylase. That amylase is designed to break down starch.
Hmm.
Cats and dogs don't have those.
Really? Huh.
We have stomachs that have pHs significantly higher than a cat or dog, which is designed to break down massive amounts of protein in the cat or dog or lion or any other carnivore.
Right.
Our pH is much higher, and we have digestive enzymes from the pancreas that are more in line with digesting starches. We have very long intestines, which are needed to break down all those starches for the transit period of time in the intestines. And our bodies are meant for gathering rather than hunting. So when you look at the accumulative data on the anthropology and the anthropometrics of the jaw, the body, the digestive organs, we're really plant-eating creatures.
Okay, so if we are designed physiologically to be plant eaters, and what we're doing instead is eating other stuff.
We're getting sick.
Yeah.
We're getting sick. As we look at different studies, the Adventist Health Study, the EPIC Study, many studies have been published about populations that follow a vegan or mostly plant-based diet. We see a significant decline in heart disease, cancers, diabetes, hypertension, bowel disease, the whole gamut of things that affect us as people in our country. So simple solution to the problem is to shun what has become our industrial diet and move back to what we were meant to eat. Amazing things are found when we do that. Not only do we get reversal of type 2 diabetes, we get a lessening of the amount of insulin even type 1 diabetics need. We get reversal of hypertension. We get weight loss. And some amazing studies done by Dean Ornish have shown reversal of coronary artery disease, our number one killer.
So we're not talking about just sort of stopping the disease in its tracks so that it doesn't make any more progress. We're actually talking about reversing the effects of the disease?
Absolutely. Candace,
how can that even be? I mean, that's shocking.
It is. It's profound. The power of plants is amazing. It's kind of like walking into your living room every day and every day catching your ankle on your coffee table. And never moving the coffee table, but every day, because the lights are dim, you continue to walk into the coffee table
and get an owie.
Get an owie. And so you go to your doctor and you say, well, doctor, my ankle hurts. What do I do? And he gives you a prescription of Vicodin. And you go home and you haven't moved the coffee table.
But your ankle's not really hurting.
The wound is still there.
You
may feel better, but the wound is still there and it's not healing.
Yeah.
And
then you walk into the table again.
You continue to walk into that table. But lo and behold, if you realize the cause of the disease and you move the coffee table or you raise the lights in the room and you stop hitting your ankle on that coffee table, the wound heals. And the capacity of the human body is phenomenal in that aspect. If you stop the insult, the body will reverse the injury.
Which is amazing. I mean, it's... Our bodies are so amazing like that. When I you get an owie on your skin, and if you just protect it a little bit, it heals completely.
And the same thing goes with the arteries. The same thing goes with inflammation in the body, manifesting as arthritis or stiffness, fibromyalgia, whatever you want to name. The same thing goes with constipation and heartburn, reflux.
Really? It's all that simple?
It's that simple, Candace.
Because I'm here to tell you, those things are not fun.
It's a horrible existence we have. And we go to our physicians, our well-intending physicians, who, with your first presentation of high blood pressure, you're given a medication that results in a need to take potassium, which causes stomach irritation, and you already have heartburn. And so now you're given Prilosec. And because of the Prilosec, now you have low magnesium. And now because of low magnesium, you're given a magnesium supplement, which isn't the right one. And now you develop diarrhea, of course, which you have to have a medication for. And the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, and so we end up saying, thank God for the pharmaceutical companies.
Absolutely.
Because what on earth would we do without
Better living
pills?
Through modern chemistry.
Yes. I know. I remember my dad, towards the end of his life, he had all of his medications lined up on his dresser, and it would take him an hour to set them out for, you know, all the days in the week, because there were so many of them. I thought, really? Is this what it is, huh?
What an unnatural existence. And it's really because we don't see the forest for the trees. We are so inundated with modern conveniences and a pill to cure a problem that we don't separate the wheat from the chaff and go back to the fact that what we were meant to eat is a natural diet. That's a plant-based diet. If we take people off the American diet and put them on a truly plant-based diet with no added oils, no animals, no dairy, what we see in a matter of 8 days is unbelievable.
8 days?
8 days, Candace. We see a lowering of blood pressure, a drop in cholesterol, anywhere from 20 to 40 points. A reversal of bowel disorder. People stop having heartburn. They stop having constipation. They hurt less. They sleep better. Their mood improves. It's amazing to see in a very short while what happens.
And it's also kind of horrifying that that isn't popular knowledge.
Downright frustrating.
Because most of us are suffering, like on a daily basis, we're suffering.
It's true. And, you know, we're all addictive creatures, Candace. The conveniences of our
food. I hadn't noticed that. All the sugar that I eat. Yeah, I know.
it's just so addictive. And, you know, we get used to a certain way of food, and to change that way of eating takes a while to start appreciating what a real potato tastes like, or what
without the sour cream and the butter and the all the stuff, the bacon topping stuff, just what a potato tastes like.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a potato with, you know, splurge a little bit, put a little tiny bit of salt on, or salsa on it, or a little soy sauce.
Yeah.
Eating can be very, very simple. If we get to the core principle of what we need for calories is starch, and that may shock a lot of people, because what they've heard out there is that potatoes make you fat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, it's not the potatoes, it's the fat on the potatoes that makes you fat.
Which only is mounded about 3 inches above the potato.
May I have another dollop, please?
Yes, exactly. Supersize that sour cream.
So when we take people and we put them on a pure starch calorie diet, and I don't mean Twinkies and Wonder Bread.
Mm-hmm.
I mean a diet that's whole potatoes, mm-hmm. a diet that's rice, mm-hmm. a diet that's squash, a mm-hmm. diet that's quinoa, and that's the basis for our calorie intake. And then we add vegetables to the top of that, and any variety of different plant-based sauces that can go with that for flavor, and spices on top of that. And there's thousands and thousands of no-oil vegan recipes available out there. And when we make that our dietary construct, the body begins to heal. Hmm. The coffee table is no longer an insult. The wound begins to close up, and our health returns. And it's very, very simple. It's just that simple. We abstain from the industry's food. We just say no.
Just say no.
We don't let the market run us anymore as far as our health.
Right.
And we understand that we're designed to live on whole starch and plants.
Seems pretty simple.
It's very simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go
ahead.
There's a few people out there who will take a stance on eating meat and how important it is, or how dairy is an important constituent in their diet. And these are comfort feelings. These are comfort zones. And people grab onto the paleo diet very quickly. Or in the past, to many people, a person's demise, the Atkins diet, or any number of such high-calorie, high-protein diets. Because people love good news about their bad habits.
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of like the tobacco industry coming out saying that cigarettes don't hurt you, and especially if you just do it in moderation.
Oh, moderation. Oh, yes, we know all about that. Moderation is the justification to do things we know are not good for us in hopes that we won't reach a critical endpoint.
Yes, yes. I noticed that with me and jelly beans. I just say, moderation now. You can have 10, but you can't have 20. But it's funny how the 10 becomes 20.
Oh, real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not very good at moderating.
No, we're really not.
And we're not very good at, you know, one person's little bit will be another person's excess.
Yes.
It's such a subjective term. So when we talk about health, it's just like if you're prescribed an antibiotic that you have to take twice a day because you have a terrible infection in your leg.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly how you take that antibiotic if you want to get well.
Mm-hmm.
Diet is the same way. Once you understand that oils are not only unnecessary, but they're poisonous, and once you understand that animal tissue is not only unnecessary for human nutrition, but poisonous, you draw a very solid line in the sand, and you just tell the patient, or if the patient heals themselves, to take that advice, make that demarcation, and don't go over it. If you want to get well, you follow the prescription. And the prescription is no animal, no dairy, and no oil that's added back to the plant.
So I have a feeling that we have sort of come to the end of the time we have for this interview. And I hate that. So, Dr. Mack, I want you back.
Well, thanks.
Can we do this more?
My pleasure.
Because I really feel like we've just basically touched the tip of the iceberg. We haven't even excavated a little bit.
It's a big subject matter, Candace, even though it's so simple and you can define what's necessary in just a few sentences. Don't eat what the industry supplies. Eat what God grows. And don't add any oil or animal to your food. And people say, well, what about B12? Yeah, that's the only stronghold. We might run out of B12 after 3 to 5 years of a pure plant-based diet. So go ahead and take one once a week.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't seem like a big hurdle.
It's not a big hurdle. Yeah. There's no such thing as protein deficiency. There's no such thing as omega-3 fatty acid deficiency in a plant-based diet.
Hmm.
You'll never be nutritionally deficient in any form.
Wow.
That's significant. Yeah, I mean, other than the B12. B12 is the last argument that,
right.
the carnivores will hold on to. Yeah.
So, in the meantime, until we can get another interview here, is there some place that people can go for more information? Are there websites? Are there books? Are there...
Yes, there's so much growing information. It's just amazing. We're at the beginning of a crest of a very large wave that's trying to correct the wrongs that have been propagated over the last half century. One great resource is the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. That's headed by Neil Bernard. And he's not only active in education and research in dietary medicine, but he's also politically active and has made some phenomenal changes. How the industry approaches us as a society and drawn some strict boundaries on what they can and cannot cross. Neil Bernard is, like I said, his name. Michael Greger, a prolific speaker, has great excerpts that are very short and easy to listen to, very colorful and very very funny. His website is known as nutritionfacts.org. And he just came out with a recent book, How Not to Die.
Yeah, I started reading that last night, and I am amazed.
Michael has become one of my greatest mentors, I would say lately. He's just an inspiration, a great guy.
Excellent.
Other authors you can look up, Dean Ornish, Caldwell Esselstyn, both physicians. Jeff Novick, an incredible dietitian that explains in just simple terms how diet misinformation has infiltrated our media. And of course, my brother, John McDougall, one of the greats in dietary medicine, is all over the internet and excellent. Has several books.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I'm just thrilled that you've done this, and I can't wait to have our next interview.
Well, Candace, it's been really fun for me.
Yay!
Because one of my favorite things in the world is to tell the truth.
Yeah, sweet.
It can't be argued against.
Yeah.
And it just is so easy to identify when you hear it. And so if anybody has any questions, just go to the internet. It's everywhere, but you can't find it if you don't look for it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's been a pleasure. Thanks again, Candace.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. If you enjoy these podcasts, please share them. Like us on Facebook and visit our website, kciw.org. While on our website, become a founding member by donating $250 to our campaign to get on the air. We're only a few thousand dollars away from being able to broadcast our signal on the airwaves, so please help if you can. This is Candace Michelle for KCIW, your community radio station. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. You can help support KCIW by volunteering your time or contributing to our capital campaign to help us get on the air. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org. Thank you for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.